met Sister Megan McElroy while I was still full-time on the Aquinas Institute of Theology faculty, and she was one of the two novice directors for the Interprovincial Dominican Novitiate, a collaborative endeavor of 19 Dominican women's congregations across the U.S. who wanted to offer a shared orientation to Dominican life for women affiliating with any one of the participating congregations. At the time I interviewed Megan, she had been elected to the provincial council of her own Dominican congregation, the Grand Rapids Dominicans. It was a tough season of life with COVID still in the rearview mirror. As you listen, it will come as no surprise to you that since our interview, Megan has been elected prioress of her religious community. Megan's understanding of power is rooted in Scripture, particularly Paul's letter to the Ephesians, chapter 3. Not 5 minutes into this interview, you'll figure out why. Megan's words on this passage so impacted me that they appear again in Redeeming Power at the end of chapter 7.
Megan, as someone who was young, for example, when I joined the Aquinas community on the faculty, I keep thinking of myself as like the David in every story. You know, like I'm fighting against the Goliath. And then all of a sudden, as a faculty member, I had this experience. I was still probably in my early 30s, where all of a sudden I began to realize, like, oh, from the perspective of the student, I'm no longer David. Like in their version of the story, I'm Goliath. Like I didn't necessarily feel like I had a whole lot of power, but from their perspective, I had power. And I was just curious if there was a time in your own life experience where you kind of like woke up to the fact that others were seeing you as someone who had power, even if maybe you didn't necessarily yes. yet feel it yourself.
Yeah. And the memory that came back to me, I think I was also in my early 30s. I was a pastoral associate at a parish in the Detroit area. And we had a staff meeting that I don't remember what the topic was, but I remember it was rather contentious. And I really didn't say anything. I was fairly new, and I'm like just trying to get the lay of the land. And the director of music ministries followed me into my office after that meeting, and he sat down. And he says, "You are a leader in this parish, and we need to hear your voice." It was like a wake up call. Like, oh my God, I do have influence here. People want to hear my voice, and I cannot hold back. I think that was one of the turning points for me in terms of what does it mean to be a minister, and what does it mean to be a leader. That you can't just sit back and let others have their say, but you also need to contribute to the conversation for good or for ill, probably. But it was a real turning point for me. So it wasn't so much about power, but it was about influence. And I guess in many ways, those two terms are used interchangeably in many ways. There are other ways when they're not.
How would you describe the difference between power and influence? And kind of what's your operative definition at this stage in the game?
So it all depends on how it is being experienced. I think many people initially have that power over, where it can often be a negative feeling, I think, for the one, kind of like you were, maybe it wasn't negative, but for your students, for my novices, every year with every group of novices, the men and the women at the Intercommunity Novitiate Program, we would sit down. And our facilitator would say to the novices, turn around and face your novice directors. And he'd say to the novice directors, what do you need your novices to hear? And I was always one of the first to speak up. And I'd say, we're not your friends, which just blew them away. It's like, wait a minute, how can you not be our friends? And I'd say, we are called to be sister and brother to you, but we're not your friends because we have this power over you in that we write evaluations of you at the end of the year. We're asked to be a discerning ear, so to speak, of these are your areas of growth. These are the areas where you're really rocking it. But that's a matter. When you get to write something that influences a person's life decision, that's power over. And so it changes the dynamic of the relationship. That can be very destructive. But I often look at power in terms of service. And that's where the influence comes, I think, that it's not a matter of you're going to do this, as opposed to have you ever thought about, you know, an invitation or a curiosity aspect to what power can be, that influence can be. And I really believe that power comes from the Spirit. I am convinced of that, that there's an internal experience, I guess, that happens when you recognize that when you're in leadership, there's a gift that's given to you that comes from the Spirit and that does have power to it. I look at power as being a ministry of service to the world, to the church, to my community.
So in these roles that you've held, what are the different kinds of power that you feel like you've had in these various roles?
I'm going to speak more from leadership because it's the most current at this point. It's an interesting dynamic because I certainly, when I was elected, I didn't look at it as a position of power. But I've come to see that members of the congregation see it that way. And sometimes, you know, I'll use COVID as an example. You know, we as a leadership team had to make decisions that benefited the common good, which, I mean, they didn't like it. And so it was a matter of obedience, of following what the leadership team, I'm doing this because the leadership team says I have to do it. You know, that's power over. And it's not something that we want or wanted to do, but we had to do for the common good of the congregation. But you hope and trust that the congregation realizes we're doing this for the good of the congregation. So that's kind of the power over that I wasn't quite expecting when I got elected.
Well, it sounds like your preference would be that people would do things out of invitation, but that sometimes that hasn't actually been experienced, and that then you need to use other forms of power.
Yes, yes. In terms of like being a novice director, and certainly it's the invitation for novices, you know, to look at their lives and their behaviors. But there were times when that was really hard. You know, it's like I could see it, but they couldn't. And they would just fight right back. And sometimes I often felt like I was yelling at them or screaming at them and just saying, you've got to look at this or look at that. And just a real resistance to it until finally, for whatever reason, it wasn't me, but there was a breakthrough. And they'd be able to say, that's what you've been saying to me. And I'm like, uh-huh. And life would change. But sometimes that didn't happen. And that's when, you know, this was a team decision between Joy and myself, but we had to make the decision. This person needs to leave. This can't continue. This is affecting the life of the community. So again, it comes down to the common good.
Right. And even with the novices, what you're describing, it's again, the image I have is almost like a power of the keys. Like I can open this door or I can shut the door. I don't know if that image from scripture resonates with you, or are there other images that when you think about being a person who has held some significant influence in your life, if there's other images that you've turned to that you've drawn on?
Well, there were several scripture passages. The first one that I've carried with through most of my life since I was a teenager is Ephesians 3, verses 14 to 21. And that's Paul's prayer to the community. And in the Jerusalem Bible translation, there's a line that talks about, may you be given the power through the Spirit for your hidden self to grow strong. And yeah, I love that line. And I've always wrestled with it and thought, what is this hidden self? And over the years, I've come to realize really that hidden self is the gift of God. It is the Spirit at the heart of who we are that is called to grow stronger every day. But that's really where the power is. So I really rely on that prayer. But other ones that have come to mind, Philippians 2, you know, where Jesus didn't grasp onto or cling to being God. So he emptied himself in order to become, as the scripture says, a slave, but, you know, a person of service to the world. So really letting go of that power that he had is really the example that we have, that I have, to let go of whatever power and trust that in that letting go, there's going to be life that comes forth somehow or other. And then Saint Dominic is another one. And the example in terms of power for me with him is he intentionally said to the brothers that he didn't want to be the master of the order. He was going to step down and they had to elect him, which is exactly what they did. it was that willingness to let go of the power of being the founder and the master of the order in order to model a way of leadership that has held on for 800 some years now. You know, it's a period of time that you are a leader, or you are the master, or you are the prioress, or you are the provincial of the order, the congregation, or the province. And that word being first among equals. So, you know, there's something about, again, the common good, but recognizing you're not above everyone else in the community.
I remember one time Father Charlie Bouchard told me that he goes, you know, when you're elected within Dominican life, you know that it's for a set period of time. And you know that at the end of that period of time, you're going to have to go back and live with these people for the remainder of time as brother or as sister. And he said that shapes the way that we do leadership then, because you know that it's not forever.
That is very true.
I'm thinking especially of that Philippians thing. I'm hearing sort of a tension in what you're saying in terms of like that Jesus like let go of this power. And at the same time, recognizing, for example, with your experience as a novice director, we're having to remove somebody from the community, which you couldn't, if you let go of that power, it was going to destroy the community. Like if you abdicated on the role that you had, it was going to fester within the community. And so it's just trying to figure out, like, when do I let go of the power and when do I take it up? I don't know if you have any thoughts around that or how you determine when to take power up and when do you do the Philippians thing.
So I'm just thinking about a couple of those novitiate experiences when we had to let women go. It was three times that we said to women, you need to go. This isn't working. One of them was bad. Another was horrific. And the other one, this was the beauty of it. She actually came into her true self. It was like being in community, she was trying to become something that she really wasn't. I guess there's a matter of time when you really need to let things kind of play out and see how's it going? Where is it going? How is it impacting folks? But then there's, I'm thinking of the first one who we had to let go, and we went round and round all year with this one woman, and Joy, she was joyed. Joy was her main director. She kept coming to me and saying, I think we've turned a corner. And I finally said to her, Joy, there are no more corners to turn. So what I'm getting at is, number one, the time before you really need to say that's it, you know, where you take control, I guess, of the power that you have. And for us, at least, it was working with each other, hearing each other's experience of these women, not coming to the decision alone. And so for me, I guess, in terms of power, and whether I hold on to it or let go of it, it's a shared thing.
I'm hearing from you two things. One is you don't make that decision alone. You do it in consultation with at least one other person. Mm-hmm. And I hear also underneath a sense of you've experimented and you've listened for a while first. You've watched for a while. Mm-hmm. You've given it some time and that it's for the good of the community.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess the word that's coming to me now is discernment. To hold on to power, to let go of it is a matter of discernment.
Given all the experiences that you've had, is there anything that still makes you nervous when you hear yourself being described as a person of power?
Yeah. Because often it's not that I hope to God people don't put me on a pedestal in any way, shape, or form. And I really don't think that they have. But they do see me as a person of influence, as a witness, as a model or whatever. And so the nervous part comes in terms of, I'm going to make mistakes. I'm not going to do this perfectly. You know, I think especially when we think about it in terms of ministry, that this is about people's experience of who God is. I mean, we really do become the face of God in many ways. People experience who God is by experiencing us. I think we understand that. We know that. And so if we end up not meeting that expectation, then how have we hurt someone's experience of God? And that's a pretty big responsibility. And I know I don't meet it often. there's a lot of humility and, like I said, the vulnerability that comes with being in that kind of a position.
Yeah, Richard Gula, I think he was one of the first people who pointed that out to me in the book on ethics and pastoral ministry. And he's particularly, I think, originally talking about it in the context with priests, for sure, and parents, for sure. But I do think we're beginning to recognize it extends further to roles like a novice director. Like, oh yeah, whatever my experience of having with authority or power gets transferred onto my relationship with how I relate to God.
Right. Yeah.
His power.
Yeah.
That is intimidating.
Yeah, it's pretty intimidating.
Is there something, even in your role now, like a tool that you wish you had in your box that you're like, I would consider that to be a gift in being able to exercise power better?
Two things. You know, I'm the youngest in my community. We haven't had someone new enter and stay in 12 years now. And so we're beginning to look at those questions about vocations. Do we continue to have a vocation director, except if anybody ever said, yeah, I'd like to fill out the papers? But it's even more about the future of the congregation in terms of our life. You know, our sisters are going to be dying. We're at 147 sisters now, and most of them are in their 80s and 90s. And so very quickly, we're going to be looking at, I think our trends say we can count on about 10 sisters dying a year. So even in 10 years, that will be down to 47 sisters. Okay, then what? Where do we go? What are we doing? What is God calling us to? And that, and I say, we're given this moment. We're called to be faithful now, which will lead us into the future somehow or other. We don't know what that is, but God's going to be there. And we had Tony Gittins here this summer talking, the title of our time together was Mission in Our Age and at Our Age.
Oh, what a great title.
It was a great title. And one of the things he said was, we are necessary only contingently, not absolutely. God managed long before us and will do so long after us.
That's such a Dominican line, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Contingently, but not absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So just that awareness that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we're only here for a part of whatever it is the mystery of God is all about, that we came forth because there was a need in the 1200s with Dominic's vision, and that's carried through now to who we are today. And there will be an ending to it, but it doesn't mean it didn't have influence or even power at some point, but it was part of the creation of whatever it is that God is doing.
Well, and as you're speaking about power, even in that context, it's begun to move out of the individual level, and you're beginning to think about power at a congregational level. Like, we as a congregation had influence on this particular moment in time, this situation in the church's history. But we also, the Philippians thing, like, we might let go of that too.
That's right. Yeah. And that's really, really hard. What we're essentially saying is our life as a congregation is going to come to an end. And how does that become missional, so to speak? You know, what is the witness? What is the ministry that we provide in making that choice? I think many of our sisters will see that as, well, we're just going to die. Well, yes. But is there a witness value in the way we choose to die that begins to offer something else to the world, that influences the world? I acknowledge the pain of powerlessness. Let's put it that way. And I find my chosen few who I can just let that out with, and then I go on. Because I recognize that still, that's all part of what I'll call the paschal journey. I'm on a path to something more than what my dream might be.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you would like more information on the book or are interested in hearing from others I interviewed, please go to my website, anngarrido.com. Can I also suggest that you check out the website for Megan's community? The Grand Rapids Dominicans are an amazing group of women founded in 1877. You can find out all about their communal priorities and vision going forward at grdominicans.org. Meanwhile, know I'm praying for you as this week you immerse yourself again in the craziness of life and try to be the leader that God has called you to be in this world.